Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Sometimes we roll our eyes at the Cowboys and Jerry Jones vanity. I do too. But when it comes to player personnel, Dallas is pretty good with the player personnel. They spot talent, they draft it, they accumulate it. They're pretty good. They don't whiff a lot on their draft picks in the last 5 or 6 years. Credit to Jerry, credit to Stephen Jones, the scouting department. So here's the story this morning. The Dallas Cowboys want to use the exclusive franchise tag on Dak. This is what I would do. It's not the franchise tag. The franchise tag would give him about $27 million a year, and Dak could, you know, talk to other teams. The exclusive franchise tag is different. They're going to pay you $33 million, but you can't negotiate with other teams. And this is why this is really smart, the exclusive franchise tag. Because Dallas knows, hey, on the market, there's not a huge hunger for Dak. We could win this negotiation, give him $27 million, and it's kind of slap in the face. But harmony matters. You don't have to step on everybody's throat in negotiations. Dallas says, no, we're going to get you closer to the number. $5 million extra dollars in Dallas, a state with no state tax. Hey, a lot of money. Okay, just $5 million a year is a lot of money. So we're going to get you to $33 million. We don't want you talking with everybody else. We're going to test this thing with Mike McCarthy. But we are going to protect ourselves. Too many people in media, I notice this all the time, they root for players to get paid. I root for teams to be nimble. I don't think you want to overpay on good quarterbacks because then people will be more reluctant to pay on true stars. In the NBA, you should pay LeBron, Giannis. In the NFL, you should pay Russell Wilson, Mahomes. You got to be careful about paying Dak that kind of money. It's not worth it. The last 2 years, we got film. Dak has struggled against every playoff team. He's 4-9. He's got 8 touchdowns and 9 picks. Last year, he was 1-7 against playoff teams with a passer rating of like 82. This offensive line now is getting older, not younger. And we've seen him without a left tackle, without a right guard, without a center for a month. He's not the same quarterback. Okay, I root for Dallas to be nimble. I want Dak to get paid, but this is why it was created. $33 million is closer to the number. It's not a slap in the face. I think you could make an argument. The value of Dak at $33 million is still a little higher than I'd want. But it is significantly higher. It gets him a 3 in that first number, not a 2. And Dallas protects itself. But clearly Dallas has concerns because they've paid running backs 2 years early. They've paid linebackers a year and a half early. And they've got concerns. And I'll say it again, the New England loss on the road and that Philadelphia loss on the road when Brady and Wentz with scout team guys, with no tight ends, with significantly less, Dak couldn't get a single scoring touchdown drive in either game with significantly better running backs, significantly better wide receivers, a significantly better offensive line. Couldn't get a scoring drive. That flight home from Foxborough, that flight home from Philadelphia with Jerry and Stephen Jones, you sit on that plane and think, we can't get a touchdown? One? Now, if you think it's Jason Garrett's fault and Kellen Moore, what Dallas is saying here is, maybe you're not wrong. And I'm not sure you are wrong. Maybe it is all Jason Garrett. Maybe it is all Kellen Moore. I don't think it is, but I'll give you this. Maybe it's more them than Dak. The Cowboys are saying, all right, give us 1 year with McCarthy and we'll know the answer. And if Dak reverts back to his rookie Dak, we're all in. Because it wouldn't be, if Dak came out this year and it was 10-6 and the numbers all go up, then you have a correlation between coach out, new coach in, numbers regain momentum. But the other thing Dallas has going for it, and this is a real thing, Tony Romo signed a deal, $17 million this weekend, to broadcast games. Once a Cowboy quarterback, you are paid for life. Who's our guy? Oh, Troy Aikman. Who'd he play for? quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, 7, 8, 9 years, win some playoff games. Tony Romo, never forget this. You all called him a choker. You all said he couldn't win the big game. Dak's winning percentage is higher than Tony Romo's. The bottom line here, Dallas has leverage. There's not a huge market. $33 million's not a slap in the face. And this is why the exclusive franchise tag was created, not the franchise tag. And I think Dallas could use that. Certainly they could. But this is more harmonious. I've been in 12 contract negotiations in my life. I've never felt like I wanted to walk out of the room and have won every single part of the contract. I like there to be balance. I like my companies to feel good about it too. I think at $33 million franchise tag for a year, it's not a slap in the face. It creates a Dallas team that can still be nimble, and let's come back in 1 year. All right, let me shift to this. LeBron was remarkable yesterday. He's been remarkable for, let me count here, 17 years. How is he not the MVP? He's not going to win it. Giannis is going to win it. Giannis is a better story. He's a good kid. We like him. He's fresh. He's new. We're fatigued on LeBron. I just laugh at this stuff. Let me ask you this. Do assists matter? You know, passing the ball to other people. LeBron leads the NBA. And he's passing to less talented people on average 1 through 9 than Giannis is. LeBron, as a forward, is going to lead the NBA in assists. Giannis is 29th, which is actually fairly low considering he's got some good shooters on that team. His team's more athletic. And frankly, he's double-teamed every time down the floor. Let me ask you this. LeBron James is the number one seed in the West, which is significantly better than being the number one seed Giannis in the East. Does that matter? And LeBron's doing it, in my opinion, with a less talented roster, 1 through 8 or 9 than Milwaukee. How is he not the MVP? By the way, just look at how the primary rival for both players thinks of it. So the Clippers already had Kawhi, already had Paul George, elite wing defenders, top 2 or 3 in the league, already had Patrick Beverley. And the Clippers are like, that's not enough. We're going to go out and get Marcus Morris. Because Kawhi's not enough, George is not enough, Patrick Beverley's not enough. We need a fourth guy to defend LeBron. How do the Celtics look at the Bucks, Giannis? Yeah, we know we're going to have to go through Giannis, but we're not really worried about size. We can get rid of Horford. We're going to go small ball East. Knowing they'll face Giannis, they got smaller. What does that tell you? Okay, this league has never run through Giannis. 7 years, 2 playoff series wins in the East. This league for 10 years has run through 2 groups, LeBron James and the Golden State Warriors. How is he not MVP? I mean, Alvin Gentry lost to him again last night and summed it up about as articulately, succinctly, and accurately as you can.
I'm just amazed that they talk about anybody other than him for MVP. You know, that's what he does. Every team that he's been to, every team that he's gone, have a chance to win the championship. I'm not sure what the definition of MVP is, but he makes everybody on his team better, and it makes it difficult for everybody playing.
Too often in the media, we root for what could happen instead of acknowledging what is happening. The Bucks are 5-1 this year without Giannis. The Lakers are unwatchable when LeBron's off the floor. People in L.A. start talking about Alex Caruso. Nice kid, but look, give me a break. LeBron last night on the floor, plus 22. Takes a break, minus 14. This is when you give Westbrook the MVP. You're voting for what could happen. He's going to show Kevin Durant, and he's going to win. And this is, let's acknowledge that LeBron is dominating the league. The Clippers are getting a fourth person to defend him. Unlike the Celtics, who have decided, even though they face Giannis, we'll go small ball. We think we can do it. I don't know. I understand people in the media voting for stories, but it's just, it's, you know, at some point, I know you're all tired of LeBron. I'll tell you who's tired of LeBron, the Pelicans. He's 4-0 this year, just like he never lost a first-round playoff series, like for 8 years in the East in succession. I mean, watch what's happening, not what could happen. LeBron's your MVP. again and will be overlooked again.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Zion is amazing, and I love Zion. And, you know, a lot of people, all the haters now are coming in. Oh, I always told you he was. No, you told us he couldn't shoot. You told us he needed to lose weight. And there was one host who loved him and did not pick him apart. Me. Enjoy. We loved him. What's amazing about Zion to me, of the many things, in the late 70s, when I started watching the NBA, it was kind of a mess. You had a lot of bad franchises. Before David Stern was commissioner, there was drug use all over the league. And it's not like the league didn't have good players. I mean, you had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was in the league. But then Magic Johnson arrived in 1978-79, and he was the perfect antidote to what illed the NBA, the problems of the NBA. He was fun. He was joyful. He was the smile. It was just his style of play was cool without trying to be. He was perfect. And he went to this big Laker brand. And suddenly, when you thought about the NBA, it put a smile on your face. The nickname Magic, his big smile. Even Larry Bird respected him. Like his rivals loved him. He was just so joyful. There's never quite been a player introduced to the NBA, not even Michael, like Magic Johnson, a 6'9.5 point guard when the average point guard was 6'1.5. When MJ left, similarly, the face of the league, you had Duncan, who was kind of boring but a nice guy, and then you had guys like Iverson and Marbury who didn't connect with kind of the mainstream fans. It matters who the face of your league is, especially in the NBA, which has been historically a star-driven league. In the early 70s, they didn't really have a connectable face to the league. I was a Dr. J fan, but he'd come from the ABA. I didn't follow him in college. I didn't know much about him. This is where Zion is just magnetic. Zion is the perfect post-LeBron player. Like Magic, just do word association. Think about the words. Dynamic, athletic, explosive, Duke, exploding shoe, smile. He's everything. He doesn't look like anybody else. And that's a thing. Luka Doncic is great, but there's been a lot of guys that can drop 28 a night. And there's a lot of guys in the NBA right now that can drop 27, 28 a night. None of them look or play like Zion. He is so unique, and most of the great players have been unique. The face of the league, Michael. Michael is the most relentless player and the greatest scorer I've ever seen post-Wilt. Magic was a 6'9.5 point guard. Shaq was the biggest guy in the league but ran the floor like a two guard. Larry Bird, people forget this. When Larry Bird came into the NBA, people forget this. There'd never been a forward. It was always guards. There'd never been a forward. You're like, oh, yeah, the best shooter in the league is 6'9.5, and I think after Magic, he's the best passer in the league. That's not what forwards did. They rebounded. They got into fights. Yeah. They didn't shoot like Larry Bird. Then there's Steph Curry, the best shooter in the history of the planet. Then there's LeBron, the Swiss Army knife. 6'9.5, never gets hurt, handles the ball like that, probably the best passer in the league. Unique matters. Unique matters. I mean, there's nothing else out there like Russell Wilson. There's nothing else out there like Lamar Jackson. There's nothing else out there like Patrick Mahomes. Hard to find even a prototype. And I think Zion is perfect. You know, when Michael Jordan left, the league lost 50% of its ratings. There was nobody to hand the baton to. When Tiger Woods left, I like Phil Mickelson, but there was nobody to really hand the baton to. Zion's it. Cross your fingers on his health. That's it. And it's interesting about it. I always try to watch sports like a consumer because you're my audience and you're a consumer. So I don't want to watch the game like I'm a scout, like I'm an analyst, like I'm a coach, like I'm a broadcaster. I want to watch it like I'm a fan. When I go to games, I sit with fans. I don't sit in the press box. I want to hear your conversations. Zion gets me to a TV. Trae Young's good, doesn't get me to a TV. Luka's great, doesn't get me to a TV. Zion is Magic Johnson. When Sean Kemp came into this league, you were like, have you seen... You know, I'm a Seattle kid. Like, everybody was like, have you seen this guy from Elkhart, Indiana, or wherever he's from? Have you seen Sean Kemp? He's going to tear down the rim. Have you seen Shaq? I mean, I remember bumping into the late Jerry Tarkanian. He goes, there's a kid down in Louisiana named Shaquille O'Neal. He'll change basketball. And I said, what's he like? And I never forget this. Tark says, like nothing I've ever seen. Zion is mostly like nothing I've ever seen. Yesterday, I have his numbers here somewhere. I'll probably find him. Oh, yeah. He's averaging, this is an interesting stat. He's averaging one dribble per touch. Now, think about that. That's not the NBA. You know somebody is talented when they go opposite of their industry. Everything now in the NBA is get the ball to the star, lot of dribbles, ball-centric, they control, and you got to shoot threes. And you got to be lean. He's the opposite. There's no lean. He doesn't shoot threes, and he doesn't dribble. And he's dominating. When you can dominate an industry going into the wind of the industry, you are incredibly special.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I have a lot of opinions. I am wrong, mostly hopefully right. But when I'm wrong, I think I have to be held accountable. You would like me to be held accountable. So we created a segment, I don't know when I started doing this thing, about a decade ago, Colin Right, Colin Wrong on Mondays. And here we go.
Where Colin was right.
Looks like the Cowboys are going to do what we predicted, an exclusive franchise tag. Now, the exclusive franchise tag means, listen, Dak, we like you. We're going to get pretty close to the number, $33 million. It's not a franchise tag, which is a little more slap in the face. We're going to do the exclusive franchise tag, but we do have concerns. You've struggled against good teams. When you've missed an offensive lineman, you have not been the quarterback we need. And that Carson Wentz, Tom Brady games, when all of your weapons and you couldn't get a touchdown. So they're listen, this is what the exclusive franchise tag and the franchise tag are created for. You like somebody, you don't want them negotiating with other teams, but you've had a coaching change and you do have concerns, so you want to be nimble. Let's give him 1 year under Mike McCarthy. And my feeling is if McCarthy and Dak work, Dallas will sign him to a longer-term deal. This is the deal we predicted. This is the deal that makes sense in our opinion.
Where Colin was wrong.
I gave the Lakers a lot of credit when Kawhi and Paul George signed with the Clippers. I thought the Lakers did a very good job to assemble some nice different used parts. I got to be honest. This team is completely LeBron driven. I mean, I like AD. I don't think he'll remain healthy for an entire playoff run. But LeBron and the Lakers are unbeaten when he scores 30 points or more. When he's between 20 and 29 points, they're 20-6. When he's under 20, they're 5-6. Bottom line is LeBron has to play really, really great basketball for them to win. I like Kyle Kuzma. I don't think you should trade him. But, you know, yesterday, KCP and Kuzma, you can't trust them in big spots. The Lakers did maybe the best they could do, but I think I've overstated the help LeBron has. Last night, without AD, it's LeBron. He takes a breather. Impossible to watch.
Where Colin was right.
Oh, all these Zion fanboys are now, they all had amnesia. Notice that. He can't shoot. He's too heavy. We were on Zion from day one. We didn't think he had to lose a ton of weight. He's had 30-point games in his first 16. He had 35 yesterday and only 16 shots. We nailed it. We said, rolling out of bed, he's going to be a top 20-25 player in the NBA somewhere at the end of his first year, beginning of his second. His growth has been faster. His scoring's been better than I thought. But the idea that he has to be a great shooter is nonsense. You don't have to be a great shooter if you're unstoppable physically down low. Is Embiid a great shooter? Is Anthony Davis a great shooter? Is Giannis a great shooter? It's a bunch of nonsense. And I don't buy into that he has to lose major weight. I do think 270 is better than 295. But all the critics of him now suddenly have disappeared or have amnesia. We nailed it. This is what we thought he would be.
Where Colin was wrong.
Since the Clint Capella trade, the Rockets are 7-2. I just didn't think you could win a bunch of games in the NBA being this small. They have, and Westbrook's been sensational. This team, since Capella got traded, has beaten the Lakers. It's beaten the Jazz. It's beaten the Celtics twice. They're not going through the dregs of the NBA. The rest of the NBA now is trying to figure this thing out. Westbrook is shooting fewer threes than ever. This is a problem. This backcourt is now a problem because they're so small that your big has to guard one of these smaller, more athletic players. I did not think Houston would figure it out this quickly, and I did not think it would be this big of a problem for their opponents. I was wrong.
Where Colin was right.
Tom Brady got caught this weekend with Julian Edelman. Somebody took a video of them FaceTiming Mike Vrabel. Yes, Tennessee appears to be the one team Brady is most interested in. we've said before, it's New England, it's Tennessee, and then it's nonsense. I do think Dallas would just, the world would implode, but that does give you a glimpse that Edelman was saying, you're coming back, and Tom was smiling, and I still think that's the answer. And the second one was a Mike Vrabel FaceTime appearance. That is the one team I believe New England could look over and think, no, I get it. The GM's a Patriot. The coach is a Patriot. They've got a star running game. Good, better than average offensive line. And they can play a little defense.
Where Colin was wrong.
The Clippers defense to me is a head scratcher. If you told me I got this team, I got Marcus Morris, I got Kawhi Leonard, I got Paul George, I got Patrick Beverley, I'd be like, oh, that's the best defensive team in the league. That's the Clippers, and they're rated 13th. Their offense has been spectacular. They've got a lot of guys that can get a bucket, but defensively, maybe it's rotation, but points allowed, they're 13th. Opponent three-point percentage, 18th. Steals, blocks, they're 18th. They're just not as good as I thought. Now, is some of it they've been injured, and some of their better defensive player, Paul George has had injuries, Beverly's missed games, Kawhi has missed many games. It could be because their best defensive players have been out. But when I looked at this thing, I thought, oh, defensively, they'll be great early. Offensively, it'll take a while to figure it out. But defensively, they'll seal and button this puppy up quick. They have not. They are still, I mean, literally the other night, Philadelphia had 71 points at half without Embiid or Simmons. I mean, I can't explain that.
Where Colin was right?
Oh, the Chicago Bears are thinking about bringing Andy Dalton in. Why? Because they've got concerns about Mitch Trubisky. Seven times last year, Trubisky had no touchdowns. That's with Matt Nagy, one of the sharpest, shrewdest, most. Matt Nagy to me is Kyle Shanahan in the Midwest. Seven times they didn't have a touchdown. By the way, he's 19-10 the last 2 years, and they're bringing in help. Why? Because if he struggles early, they can go to an Andy Dalton or a backup. Chicago, stop being defensive. The fan base in Chicago gets all freaked out. You watch Mahomes, you watch Lamar, you watch Russell Wilson, you watch Carson Wentz. Do you see that? No. This is what we've said. Long term, he is not the guy to build around. Short term, you give him one more year, but you bring in somebody when he erodes, and he will.
Where Colin was wrong.
All right, Andy Dalton. Apparently, there's four different teams interested in Andy Dalton. Looks like beige is the color of the season. I've never been a Dalton fan, but he is stable. He made the playoffs 5 straight years. He's a pro. You know you get a grown-up. He's not highly emotional. Miami has been mentioned. And by the way, the smarter teams in the league, the Colts have been mentioned. New England's been mentioned. The Bears and Miami have all been mentioned for Andy Dalton. He was never my, cup of tea. But there is something to be said. His price right now, and I've said this about Cam, you get to a point where his price is so reasonable, it's a discount. So Andy Dalton's got much more of a pulse on the market than I predicted.
Where Colin was right.
All right. I got a lot of heat almost 1 year ago today when I said there is no way. I'll let you hear what I said about the proposed Jason Tatum for Anthony Davis trade rumors a year ago, which I said, no way I'm doing that. There is no way in the world when I hear all these trade rumors about Jason Tatum of the Celtics, a 20-year-old kid that is not even close to his ceiling, getting traded for Anthony Davis, pass. And I like Anthony Davis. He's at close to his ceiling. I like it. But I'll take Jason Tatum, and I'll go against what every NBA expert and analytic whiz tells you. I am never trading that kid. He's what you're praying for when you win ping pong balls in the lottery.
That's funny.
Jason Tatum is now the next emerging superstar in the NBA.
I don't know why I'm not an NBA scout, seriously.
Shot 50% in February, Joy, 48% from threes, 8.5 rebounds, a willing defender. I like Anthony Davis. We do this every time. We pick apart these young kids. We just eat them alive. Jason Tatum is long, can put it in the deck, can defend, can shoot a three, can drive. He's athletic. He's coachable. I like Anthony Davis. But Anthony Davis, there's injuries. I don't think he has sort of that kind of leader DNA. I think he's just a great player DNA, 25-10 a night. I got more heat for saying this. And today, Jason Tatum,
There's not a lot of stars in this league you're going to trade for Jason Tatum if it's a 10-year window. The kid is special.
Where Colin was right and wrong.
All right, this is weird. Tua is rumored to go number two to Washington now. And I just laughed, so did Joy, at the talk 4 months ago that Tua's going to fall in the draft. We're like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So we're right about Tua. But I would be wrong about Dwayne Haskins, who I thought was should have been a number one or number two pick. Haskins is big. He was tall. He was accurate. I didn't think he was perfect. He's not overly mobile, and he's not a good thrower when he leaves his comfort zone of the pocket. I was wrong on this. I don't see a ton with Dwayne Haskins. I don't. I think he's turnover prone. I think he's overwhelmed. The things I hear in the locker room, he's not kind of the work ethic's been marginal. And there's a story today that Ron Rivera likes Tua. So I was right on Tua, but I'm wrong on Dwayne Haskins. I thought if I had a number one pick last year, big, tall, accurate, played in a major conference, you know, I didn't think he – I thought he was a little bit like Jacob Eason, but more talented, that there's something there. But I didn't think he was quite ready to play. But through seven games, I haven't seen it, and I just think I'm wrong on Dwayne Haskins. It's not the end of the world. I mean, a lot of people drafted Johnny Manziel and Tebow, and I didn't like either of them. But calling right and wrong on the same player.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So it seems to me TJ Hushmanzada, over a decade in the NFL, made a Pro Bowl as well, drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals. It seems to me that if you had a quarterback and you liked him, Jimmy Garoppolo, Wentz, Russell Wilson, you would sign him up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the position where, and it's not the only position, but if you like somebody, get them early. And the theory has always been, TJ, it'll hurt for 2 years, but the last 2 to 3, you feel like you're getting a discount with a Carson Wentz. So Dallas has paid everybody, and they haven't paid Dak. Aren't they telling me, we like him, we want one more year with McCarthy to see if we love him?
They're not sold. If Patrick Mahomes was a Cowboys quarterback, they would be saying, when do you want to sign this contract?
Right.
When Russell Wilson told Seattle, if you don't give me a contract extension by this day, I'm not re-signing.
Yeah, that got worked out quick.
It happened really fast. And so with Dak Prescott, it's no. And so for me, they like him, but they don't love him. And that's just the nature of the business. They're not sold on him because if this was Patrick Mahomes, contract would be done.
I said it this year, that New England game and the Philadelphia game, they go on the road, have significantly better offensive personnel, and in both instances, zero scoring touchdown drives. I think, you know, Jerry gets on that 3-hour flight home with Steven after that New England game, and he's like, we got Zeke and Amari and an O-line, and then Philadelphia, Carson Wentz has scout guys, and it feels like they were leaning long-term deal. And then that Philadelphia-New England game, they get home and go, we either got to get a new coach or a new quarterback. We're not going to do both. And they made a choice. That's what it feels like to me. Like,
I'm sure those games made them pause and say, we can't score. We can't score a touchdown.
Eight quarters, no touchdown drive.
And so I'm sure that gave them a reason to sit back and reflect and say, something's wrong here. Either we got the wrong quarterback, we got the wrong offensive staff, we got the wrong head coach. You can't really get rid of all the players, but you can get rid of a coach. If he doesn't rebound and play similar to how he did his rookie year and some of his second year, they're going to have to move on and find another quarterback. For me, I'm signing Dak. I like Dak as a quarterback. I think he's earned his another contract. Now, the amount that he's earned is very debatable, but I believe he's earned it.
Yeah, this exclusive franchise tag would be $33 million a year. A franchise tag without the exclusivity is $27 million. It feels like to me Dallas is saying, we're not trying to publicly embarrass you. We'll get you close to the number you want, but we're not giving you 4 years. Because they could just franchise tag him, and he could be out in the market, negotiate. I don't think he has a huge marketplace, but they're Jacksonville. You know, we got teams out in this league that don't know. By the way, Joy's got an unbelievable Herdline news today. One of her best. I haven't seen it yet, but the two stories in there, you got to stick around for it. So, but for the record, players don't love this franchise tag stuff, do they? They don't love it.
Players, if you're in Dak's position, you don't love it, but when he sees a game check, he's going to be like, oh, wow.
Now, tell the audience how you are paid in the NFL.
You get paid every Monday.
for every the Monday. Whole year?
No, no. You get paid every Monday just the football season.
So his checks are going to be monstrous.
At franchise tag is $33 million.
And there's no state tax in Dallas.
Man, Dak is going to be seeing so – like, if you think he made, I believe, $2 million last year.
So his game checks could be $2 million bucks.
Every game check. And this is every Monday. And when I played, it was – I'll never forget it. I was making league minimum, and I thought I was rich. I was getting $9,000 a week. And at the time, the Bengals didn't have direct deposits, so it was a real check, right? And so there would be vets that were making big money, and they would just come show you the check and be like $457,600. I'm like, oh,
that would inspire me.
It did inspire me. I was like, oh, I got to get this. And then I, in turn, did the same thing to young guys when I was getting those checks. And it's just inspiration. This is something you work for and you can get here. Guys did it to me. And so with Dak, he's going to see that first check and he's going to be like, oh, wow. But guys that have made big money, you don't want the franchise. With a guy like Dak, you embrace it because you believe in yourself. You're young enough. And I'm going to just keep hitting you on top of your head if you don't want to pay me.
Yeah. $2 million game checks would be nice. And by the way, Dallas is not an inexpensive city, but with no state tax, it is a far cry from a New York or a Los Angeles. You can buy quite a home off one game check.
I'm telling you, he's going to see that check and he's going to be like, wow. Well, he'll see the direct deposit part of it. Still the same thing. He's going to be blown away.
Okay. So there was a story this weekend with Brady and Edelman were at a basketball game and they're saying a bunch of stuff. And then there's a piece of video where somebody was, you know, in this day and age, is taking a picture of Edelman talking to Mike Vrabel. And what was T.J. Hushman's honest takeaway on this?
Edelman knows it's done.
Well, like, what do you mean it's done? What's done?
He's unless New England just comes to the table with so much more money than they've offered, he knows Brady is gone. And he's hoping that they come to the table with more, but he knows it. And that's why the T-shirt and – That the public display of Vrabel in Tennessee has been a team that would be interested in Brady. They know it's over. And
wow.
Edelman knows it. Tom knows it. New England knows it. They just don't know how to separate. And for me, unless I said it on here, I believe you guys were gone. 0% chance. It's a 0% chance he goes back to New England.
That is, you should leave at least 0.5% open.
I'll say 0.5%. If they offer him $30 million a year, which they're not going to do.
That is very strong. You come in with strong opinions on this show.
I'm going to be right about this, unless they come with over $30 million
a
year.
Boy, the day you're right on this, you can just come and mock me.
0% chance. I wouldn't say that if I didn't believe that to be the case.
Well, that's why we bring you on the show. You feel strongly about it. I do think Tennessee makes a lot of sense. Star running back, top 10 O-line, Mike Vrabel, GM's a Patriot.
Good receivers.
Yeah, they have all the stuff that Tom, you know, I said this. When people change jobs, and you can go to yourself for this, I know this is the way it's worked in my life. When you change a job, what you really do, and you can sometimes let the pendulum swing too much, but I've done this. You want to solve the number one complaint at your old job. That's what you want to do. You try to solve this. So, for instance, Brady's number one complaint is, I got no weapons. It's not money. Well, they got a running back, and they got a speed receiver, and Adam Humphries, a slot receiver, and Corey Davis, a third receiver. And Tennessee, by the way, with Vrabel, it would be another thing New England's not. It would be a little lighter and more fun.
Go to that playoff game. You don't think Mike Vrabel is thinking if we had Tom Brady over Ryan Tannehill that we beat the Kansas City Chiefs? You don't believe he thinks that? You don't believe with 8 in the box, the Chiefs were single high safety pretty much the majority of the game. They came out, tried to play two high safety, thinking Tennessee would. They literally were single high. Tom Brady's going to eat that up. That's pitch and catch. That's routes on air. And so Vrabel knows if we have 12 back there, we would have gone to the Super Bowl this past year.
Wow. Then, well, they solved some issues. It's a little more fun. He's got his buddy, Mike Vrabel. So you and I are on different sides. I can't wait to see the conclusion. Sometimes I don't mind being wrong. Joey and I have said this. We root for mayhem. Tom Brady to the Titans, and then who goes to New England? I'll be honest. That's a good week of shows for me.
And it will. Everybody, who deserves a credit? Belichick or Brady? Now, who was more important?
Where does New England go? Jameis Winston, according to a story, Joy Today. They're out on Jameis Winston in Tampa.
Wow.
Teddy Bridgewater's out there. I like Teddy Bridgewater. Andy Dalton's out there. So, okay, now we've talked about this. Solve the New England dilemma. Who would you take? Because I think Bridgewater's high IQ, low mistake, limited downfield thrower, but that's what New England has now in terms of weapons, limited downfield receivers.
If I'm New England, I will look into Teddy Bridgewater. I don't know if the cost would be worth it, or I look at Andy Dalton. And I say Andy Dalton because he's smart. He played in that type of weather, being in the AFC North, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, that he's played in bad weather. Brady's a smart guy. That offense is complicated. Andy Dalton, from everybody that I've talked to, is very smart. And so that would fit. Andy Dalton doesn't have a big arm, that he's going to throw the ball short anyway. That fits the offense that they've run with Brady.
It does.
And so I say Andy Dalton, not Bridgewater, just because Bridgewater wants to get paid. He hasn't been paid. He wants to get paid.
Yeah. Andy Dalton stories. NFL Combine this weekend. My only observation, big guys are faster than ever. Some of those old linemen, I can't even believe it. Some of these old linemen weighing 325 or running 488s. I don't even
understand. Even the brothers, the D linemen from, I believe it was Nebraska. Them dudes 310 running 4.8s and 4.7s, like 310 pounds.
Do you have a combine story? Do you So what year was the combine for? You didn't get invited to it, or you did?
2001. It's so different now. Like now, it's on TV. In the way they do it, it's an event. It's like the draft now.
No, it's addictive to watch. I sat and watched it. It's addictive.
And so it's so like that's why I didn't like if you get invited to the combine. You work out because it's an event now, and they make it almost like it's the draft below the Super Bowl. They make it an event that when we were doing it, it was you go take the Giants. They give you like a big old phone book of a test, and, you know, I'm old now. People don't even know what a phone book is now, but it's completely different. Just the whole environment, the atmosphere, interviews are capped at, I believe it's 15 minutes. The way they do things now is completely different, but it's what you said. The kid from Iowa, for him to move like that jump like that, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it definitely – my prediction on this draft has been a lot of offensive tackles in the first round, and then mid-second round on, it's wide receivers, six around, seven around.
You're going to get arguably a first-round wide receiver in the third round.
Yeah.
And it's just too many good ones.
There's too many good ones. That's why I say – Judy, the kid from Alabama, is a first-round pick. I would be very cautious on drafting any wide receiver after Judy for about 40 picks. I think there's so much duplicity the right word? There's so much duplication potentially in this draft at wide receiver. I've never – it's funny because I have friends who do this for a living. They're scouts, and they're all saying the same thing. There's like, you may get a starting receiver in the fifth or sixth round. You may find a guy that walks into your team and starts in the fifth or sixth round.
If you know what you're looking for, rarely should a receiver bust. If you really know what to look for in a receiver and how to create separation, the guys that cannot create separation are the guys that are, I don't care how fast you are, if you cannot stop and decelerate and